Today's episode is sponsored by Umore. Umore helps us better understand and uplift our mental health with instant screening, data tracking, insights, and targeted exercises. I've had the pleasure of having both co-founders on the podcast, and I really admire what they do and love their vision behind the company. Umore is the AI-powered mental well-being tracker that helps you build positive habits, change behaviors, and share your progress with friends, family, and physicians. Umore's vision is to make mental health as seamless and as accessible as possible. Its purpose is to act as a support and prevention tool and to provide you with the data and insights to help you develop an awareness of your current mental state and stress levels. The way it works is very simple. You download the app for free on your smartphone. You fill in a quick questionnaire that will assess how you're currently feeling, which will act as a starting point, and it will check in with you daily to track your well-being over time and so that you are able to see your progression day by day. Umore also gives you access to many evidence-based exercises which are designed to help you live your happiest and healthiest life. The goal of Umore is to be your friend, is there to help and support you in your mental health journey. And to find out more, you can check out their website at umore.app. Hey guys, welcome to Hope It Helps. Today's guest is Lara Dahan. Lara is a sustainable development professional with extensive experience in the industry. She currently is working at the Global Institute for Disease Prevention, tackling some of the world's most pressing issues surrounding climate and health. She is a person who is extremely passionate about environmental issues and believes that people, the planet, and prosperity are the key drivers in order to make significant change. During this episode, we discuss the various perspectives around climate change. We talk about the role of governments, corporations, and people, in addition to how the media uses fear to shape the narrative around climate change. And the last message she wanted to share is act in service of self, earth, and others. Please welcome to the show, Miss Lara Dahan.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. So Lara, me and you, I think we met each other like 2 years ago. And over the past 2 years, that every time we're out, whatever, we seem to somehow at some point end up in some like deep conversation in the corner. And the last thing we talked about was climate change. And I know that's the work you do as well. It's a topic I haven't really touched on the podcast. So I'm really excited to dive into it and have this kind of conversation. But before we get into everything, why don't you give all of us a little bit of background about yourself and we'll take it from there.
So I guess I'll give you background, which is relevant to the topic at hand.
Sure.
I have a background in management marketing, which is nothing notable to the cause, but later decided to move into doing a course on, well, a master's on environmental law and sustainable development, mainly because I used to be that person on a soapbox, like, we have to care the polar bears, you know? And I kind of just got tired of spewing that, and I wanted to be a more credible person around the topic. So I did this course and really loved it. I found that, you know, my love of learning was ignited, and it's really nice to kind of study something that you're passionate about. That unlocked something really beautiful for me. And as a result of that, I managed to find or attract opportunities to kind of live in that space. And I moved to Paris, where I worked for an institution called the Institute for Climate Economics.
Okay.
There I worked on economic drivers and incentives to motivate climate action. And it was a really great experience. Ended up attending the very momentous COP21 for those of you.
Oh, wow. You did? Oh, yeah, no way.
No, that was like, I felt too lucky.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's a big one.
Yeah, and I wasn't so interested in moving to Paris, but then I thought, since that's happening, right, it seems the universe is a little bit behind this, so I'll go. So that was really wonderful and a great opportunity. And me, I'm not really such a numbers person, but it was really interesting to work in on economics and financial drivers. So it really kind of grounded me in my perspective, not just hippie save the world, but like, what are the mechanisms that are really needed to achieve what we want? And then after that, I kind of pivoted into a more broad scope, which was sustainable development.
Okay.
Working on trying to achieve the 17 sustainable development goals, which are 17 goals for prosperity, people, and planet, defined in 2015.
Okay.
And the world, I mean, I hope everyone knows about it, but it's like the worst promotion I've ever seen of such a fantastic concept and framework to really just kind of show that there are many different areas that achieve a prosperous life, from like trying to deal with poverty to, you know, clean water, gender equality. So many different themes are represented in this framework, and it's supposed to help be this indivisible, universal map to action for the whole world.
Okay.
And part of that is climate. So that's where I kind of gave in my expertise. expertise, but like my knowledge, my understanding up until that point. So I work there at the Sustainable Development Solutions Network for it's a UN initiative, and it was really great. And then decided I wanted to move to the UAE because I felt like there's such a huge opportunity for sustainability here. I was very passionate about it, but came and of course COVID, and I had to kind of come up with a plan B. But incidentally, now I'm working in global public health, which is a very hot topic at the moment.
Of course.
Exactly. So I feel like it's all part of the big plan, whatever that plan is. And I'm trying to, at the like, as part of my work, among other responsibilities, trying to understand the intersection between infectious disease and climate change. How does climate change exacerbate or potentially, or like how climate action could help to address infectious disease and accelerate elimination?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, that's you've done a lot. Sounds like you've done a lot in the field, and having that experience in Paris at COP must have been incredible.
It was wild.
For like someone like yourself who actually is passionate and cares about that kind of thing, that's like the event. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So many points that you brought up and that we're gonna dive into today. I wanted to. It was interesting. I never knew that you started becoming, like, I guess more interested or passionate about it at a later age. I thought, you know, like growing up, you always maybe had that that interest, or that was something that you cared about. So could you tell us a little bit about like that, how kind of it became such an important thing for you?
Well, this goes into a bit like developmental psychology. I told myself for most of my life that I have no talent, I have no passion. I didn't excel at school, didn't know how to work according to the system that was put in front of me. So I struggled a bit, but then noticed there were areas where I was passionate. Like when I did my Spanish oral exam when I was like 15, it was about climate. When I spoke at the school assembly, it was about ending poverty. And it always ended up being around these social topics. Okay. And it only in later life where, you know, the universe wasn't handing me everything I wanted on a silver platter, where I was like, oh, maybe I have to put some effort. And someone, very lovely person, dear to my heart, gave me a kick in the ass and said, excuse me, and said, just do some studies, just invest yourself, like really put some action behind what you want. No one's going to just give you the keys and tell you, go save the world.
Yeah.
You're going to have to invest something in it. And that's kind of what started me on that trajectory. So it's been a passion my whole life, but an unrevealed one until a later age. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that, mm-hmm. I think that's the exactly. keyword, unrevealed. So funny that, you know, when you're 15, it was about climate. When you did all these kind of talks, it was about these social issues. So it sounds like it was always a part of your life. You just weren't maybe aware that, like, oh, this is actually what I really care about.
But I could do something.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So I wanted to touch on this topic, because I think it's interesting. So when it comes to something like recycling, for example, do you believe that every little bit counts? You get what I mean with that question?
It
like
depends
that,
on,
that
yeah,
concept,
I
right?
Totally
you know
get
what I
it.
Mean? Yeah.
I totally get
what
it.
What are your thoughts?
And I think it depends what level we're talking about. Do you want to feel satisfied in your daily life that you're contributing? Then absolutely recycle. That makes you feel good. You're actually, like I said before, I took actions to make me more aligned with my values.
Sure. Yeah.
And if you want to recycle, that's aligned with your values, it's really the statement that you're making to yourself and to your community that this is important. In the big grand scheme of things, absolutely not. It is probably at the very end of the rung of the ladder to say what was going to actually change or impact climate. One amazing and revelatory statistic I came across many years ago, which probably still holds true, is at the end of the day, you've gone to supermarket, you've bought a toy. I bought a Barbie, for example, for my cousin or whatever it may be. I bring it home, I take the Barbie out, I throw the packaging away. Well, not even the packaging. I put it in a trash bag filled with other trash.
Yeah.
That trash that I put on the sidewalk is 1% of the total trash it took to create
that bag.
You know, 1%. So whatever you're doing, it's nice and it's good for you. And I think it creates a really good relationship and statement for yourself. But no.
No.
I don't think so.
You
I mean,
think so.
For corporations, yes. For individual, no. But it will add up. And I think a community that recycles is making a statement. And that's a good thing. And it will add up. But in terms of, is it the low-hanging fruit? It's absolutely not.
Yeah. I guess that's my perspective on it, is that I get the concept behind every little bit counts. You know, okay, let's say I'm a person who recycles. Like you said, it maybe helps my community, whatever. But something you said that was really interesting to me is, As long as like you feel good about it and it aligns with what you believe, that's fine. My question then becomes, okay, if every little bit counts individually, fine, maybe it does. On the bigger scale, like you said, it doesn't. So then I think about, okay, if on the bigger scale, doing every little bit doesn't count, how do you start to, I guess, influence that change? Because, for example, I'm that kind of person. Personally, I'm not someone who recycles. It's just not a part of me. It's not something I, you know, not that I don't believe in it. I just don't do it because on that point of does every little bit count, I think I'm like, okay, if I do this, fine. But like, am I changing anything? Whatever. But maybe personally, it doesn't, you know, feel that way. So then the question becomes, how do you start, if that's how, like someone like me, that's how I feel, how do you start, I guess, changing that mindset or that perception to maybe start doing a little bit more or changing, you know, the way you think about those kind of things?
The biggest scam about the whole recycling thing is that they've put all the onus on the end user to make a difference and completely distracted from the fact that it's the corporations and the entire supply chain that needs to be made efficient and not you and how you're throwing away your waste. Also, like for example, there are 7 types of plastic that are sold widely.
Okay.
Only 3 of those are actually recyclable.
Okay.
Okay. So corporations, why don't you make all of them recyclable or make 2 types of plastic? Then we'll be very happy to put them in separate bins and that will make a difference. Mm. But when you have this very kind of diffuse, like kind of approach and all the materials that we're being given, how are we supposed to make a difference in that? And then we also have to have confidence in the infrastructure that's available to recycle.
Okay.
Not everybody has the same mechanism, machinery to be able to recycle certain things. Their collection bins are maybe not made efficient. So these policies need to be really well developed in order for them to work. And it's a kind of like a distraction to say, oh, you know, do your part. But like, who's, are they doing anything? Are big corporations making the, or are governments or whatnot applying the appropriate regulations to help guide good behavior and guide the efficient management and production of goods that we all deserve. I want a plastic bottle. I do. It's very convenient. We innovated this and it's wonderful. But, you know, I don't want one that's necessarily going to exist in the environment for the next million years. Mm-hmm. So what can we do about that? And I think without people, the real change that can happen, and this is when I had my dreams crushed at a young age. I was saying that climate, all the plastic, et cetera. And someone was just like, I have 3 words for you, Laura. Okay. Regulation, regulation, regulation. I was like, oh, how boring. Mm. I don't want to become a lawyer. Like, what do you mean policy? But yeah, I mean, throughout my career, I realized how important policy is. Because in the end, policy is not a boring thing. Policy is an alignment of values that we all aim to adhere to and perpetuate and elevate in society because that's what we believe in and what we think is right.
So
there's still some room for recycling to become a central part of our lives, but I think it starts with a trifecta of governments and private companies and people all agreeing on what needs to be done together and then making that change. And that applies to pretty much every climate issue.
Yeah.
You can't move unless you have all 3 in agreement, and that's the hardest thing to do.
I really like how you described it because personally, I've always thought of it from an end user perspective, and you're like, and you saying that, oh, it's people like say, oh, the end users do your part, but the guy who made this, like the corporations, they, like, even if I do my part, it's negligible compared to what they've done to give me, like, this water bottle or this product or so on. So
Why are you giving me something that's not recyclable? If you want me to recycle.
No, I thought that's really interesting because I've never thought of it in that way or never looked at it from that perspective. One thing that I think has been a key thing is regulation. Now, when we're going to dive into the fear aspect a little bit later, but when we're talking about regulation, so you're putting in like certain laws to align more with like a green initiative or to become more environmentally conscious and so on, right? But so there's the regulations and then there's the penalty for those regulations. Mm-hmm. And correct me if I'm wrong, I don't know the numbers, but the penalty is not, is at least from what I've heard, never significant enough to like force me to be like, oh, maybe I shouldn't. You know what I mean? Or because like, okay, I'm making $2 billion a year. You're I have to pay like, what, 10 million, 20 million? What is that? That's nothing. I'll make that tomorrow. You know what I mean? So if the penalties seems not to be working, at least. And from my, at least from my perspective, I don't know. I don't know the numbers. So if penalty isn't the way, so like there's regulation. I'm not going to follow it. Then there's a penalty. Okay. Even with this, if it's not working, then what's step three?
Let's go for step two, because okay. There is a place for financial penalties. And in the United Nations, it's called the polluter pays principle.
Okay.
All right. Not necessarily upheld, but it underpins a lot of the policies that they try and advocate for. So how much is a tree worth?
That's a great question. I don't know.
And this is why the polluter pays principle isn't working. You can't quantify a tree or a river or soil. We don't fully understand our ecosystem. I mean, we have mastered it in many ways, but yet at the same time don't fully grasp it.
Okay.
And that's why we can't apply a financial system and overlay it on a tree. Like, this is an entire indivisible system where the tree feeds the cloud, feeds the... and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, in that case, there is a price. It's a very high price, right? It's just being undervalued, which is why it's not motivating change. So the price of carbon is low because people are trying to set it according to what they think they can pay. And like you said, for a $1 million corporation, what's like throwing $500,000 here? It's nothing. And they still avoid it. And they still avoid it. So until we're able to, and I just don't think that's ever going to happen. We can't quantify nature.
Okay. I think that's fair.
Yeah.
That's
fair and point. So I like that people are trying to, because that's the forgive me, masculine capitalist attitude. Mm-hmm. That's like, you know, put numbers on everything and things will organize themselves, create incentives and financial penalties.
Yeah.
And it has driven a lot of movement. You know, the reason why solar panels are cheaper now is because of incentives to mm-hmm. do so.
Yeah.
So that's, it's great, but it's not going to be the catch-all approach to fix this.
Yeah.
And so the third thing
yeah.
is, honestly, the climate change issue, it's not an issue, it's an opportunity.
An opportunity.
Yep. It's an opportunity for us to address what I will call runaway capitalism. So capitalism has been fantastic. Oil has been such a driver for innovation and prosperity. I am so grateful to its contribution to who we are and what we've managed to do and become. But like now, after the 20th century... that now we're in the 21st century, we start to see the caveats of that approach.
Of course.
Okay, fine. Like, think about your own life. You try something, then you realize, oh, I made some progress, but like, I should probably fix a couple of things if I want this to keep going and I want to keep growing and evolving. Mm-hmm. We have to do the same with this. But unfortunately, just the way the system is kind of built, it makes it really difficult to evolve and change. Things are pretty much set in their ways in terms of we want growth, growth, growth. When, you know, growth might not be the best marker for prosperity. Certain amount of growth, absolutely.
Yeah.
But like this expedited growth, actually eventually in many graphs, many scientists have indicated that, you know, there is a plateau of when growth meets benefit. And
yeah, of course. Yeah.
And we need to just learn where that is and start to change course. But right now we're just keeping on the up, and the up is... you know, not going to work in a finite system. And that's the kind of, that's the rub on climate.
Okay. I think you made a really good point about how the perspective about it, you know, how it's oil, like you said, I think it's a great example, got us, I guess, to where we are today. But now we're in a new game now. All right. This is a situation. Okay. Oil is still very useful, very helpful. But now we know more about lots of other ways that we could do it. They might not be as cost efficient. It might take longer to do. And those kind of points is what, you know, hits the wall against that whole growth mindset that you were talking about. So I think it's very challenging to convince, if it's challenging to convince a person, I can't imagine what it's like trying to convince a corporation to completely... Not even if it wasn't, even just to start moving in that direction, you're going to have some friction, you know, some resistance. So you said there has to be government, people, and corporations. Now, okay, government can put the regulations, people can do their part, and businesses can, you know, try to create more sustainable initiatives and make their products maybe more environmentally friendly. So even with all those three I can't find, in my mind, I don't know, you would know more. And I don't see a way that all three are actually going to be like, or an example of that at least.
So I'm not going to, it's not going to be a positive.
Okay, yeah, that's fine.
But
that's
so fine. The role of government is to regulate.
Yeah.
The role of the private sector is to innovate.
Yeah.
And the role of the people is to create demand.
Okay.
All right. So for example, Nestle, guy, this is completely just, I know this is true, but the facts are not, but this happens everywhere across the world. So let's take it as a myth or an allegory or something. Nestle builds a factory in Minnesota. Not factual. Maybe it is. But this is basically what happens. Nestle builds a factory. They pollute the water system because they're using it to, you know, manage their machinery for whatever reason. You know, the environment starts to degrade. The people in the town, their water is polluted. They're upset. They're angry. So 10,000 people over 5 years fight tooth and nail every single day. Bad publicity for Nestle, petitioning the government. And what does Nestle do? Completely greens that facility.
Okay.
Thing is, there's so many issues going on right now. And corporations will respond. If people don't buy their product, they're an animal like that. They only supply and demand. Supply and demand.
Very simple, you know? Yeah.
So, that's true. But there's just too many issues and too much, I can't find a better way of saying it, but bad behavior.
Okay.
That there aren't enough people on the planet to fight all those causes for 5 or 10 years, you know? So this is the issue. Like, yeah, we can totally do it. Every human being and groups of people have the absolute capacity to make magnificent change.
Absolutely.
But like, we're a bit inundated and understaffed, and we can't possibly do it all on our own. So we need something else that's going to help drive that change.
Yeah.
So that just to take us a little bit further of the way,
sure.
So that then corporations, then we can start to maybe elevate our voice to say what we need and what we want, what we stand for.
Yeah. And when I think that's a great example of how the like supply and demand, for example, and in that example that you use, whatever company it is, if your customers now are starting to demand these kind of things, whether government is in it or not, you're going to want to do that because it's in your interest.
Absolutely.
To feed the growth that we were talking about, that growth mindset that we were talking about. You said something about the systems are kind of, they're like legacy systems and they're kind of stuck in it at the moment, and that there's not enough mechanisms to move around to start making these big changes. So if the system, how do we start like cracking that wall and start, you know, loosening those screws? Let's, guys, maybe we should go right instead of left this time. You know what I mean?
I mean, for me, I really see that as the government role.
Okay.
Yeah. I think changes in policies, taxation, things like that, to the right people for the right purpose, would be the way to kind of chip away at that. And then the people come in and they kind of give voice to, yes, please do that. Yeah, we support you. And you're going to get my business if you follow. Oops, excuse me.
August.
You're going to get my business if you follow these policies. Mm. That kind of air is what we need. Yeah.
Yeah.
But my overall and arching thing is that climate change is a human opportunity. Everyone's really fear-mongering right now about it.
Yeah.
The thing is, climate disasters have happened since the dawn of time.
True.
There's also, and the discord, like in climate, in the climate space, is really exhausting. Mm. Some people are like, oh, everything's cyclical. Like, this is, everyone's just trying to make you afraid. Other ones like, ah, oh, you know, private corporations are killing the planet and we're all going to die in like 10 years and everything's going to be underwater. I'm not saying either are like, none of those arguments are actually relevant to me overall because they're fear-based. Climate is something that's is important to us. Our environment's important to us. We thrive only in a healthy environment. Right now, our environment is sending indicators to say it's not healthy. Whether that's cyclical or accelerated or not, it doesn't matter. We are being presented with an issue and we need to respond. And part of that is to innovate beyond what we've been doing in the past. Whether climate change existed or not, it'd be better to have clean air.
True, yeah.
Whether climate change existed or not, we should manage our water better. Mm. We should try and yield more crops. We should, you know, treat animals with respect. Like, these things are not climate dependent. We should be doing them as part of our evolution as human beings.
Yeah.
So that's really where I want the climate change discussion to start to go. Like, everyone's going to die.
Yeah.
No one survives this place.
Yeah.
Newsflash, spoiler alert. How do we want to live?
Yeah.
Do we want to live trying to make the world a better place, make our lives more fulfilled, more prosperous, etc.? Or do we want to, I don't know, scramble and succumb to these issues and never really take the opportunity to come together and do something beautiful with it.
Yeah. It's interesting that you said, you look at it, I've never spoken to anyone or seen something that someone tells me, you know, like climate change is always like a negative thing. It's a challenge that is bad. Like it's a problem I have to fix, but you see it as an opportunity, which when you think of it, it's the same question, but you're looking at it from two different lenses. Looking at it from this way is much more productive, I think. And I think it kind of opens the, like your mind to like start like looking at it in a different way. And obviously, as you know, changing people's mindsets is probably one of the hardest things to do in the world. And what we talked about last time, which I thought was interesting, that, and you just said it now, like the climate change discussion is exhausting. And there's no, the word you used last time we spoke was, there's no middle ground. It's extremes. You're either 100% for it or 100% against it. So I wanted to ask, what role do you think the media plays in this discussion? Because I believe that no matter which side you're pushing, that is going to have a huge impact on the narrative of what climate change is.
I mean, the media, if we've learned anything over time, the media used to be independent. It used to be news, like, oh, puppies were born in the supermarket.
I wish the news was ever
things like
that.
Like,
imagine.
But now
breaking
there's
news.
Because of sponsorship and everyone's captured, we're getting bites and they're curated. They're not giving us an opportunity to critically think about what we're consuming and what we're learning. So I feel and you know, sex sells, fear sells, like these are, you can just expect that that's what you're going to get from your news. So unfortunately, I wouldn't suggest that anybody really go there for an understanding of how to approach climate. Really.
Yeah.
To know that there's a flood going on or there's drought going on, to alert you of major issues, absolutely. Mm. Hopefully they drive action. But other than that, I have not yet seen a really integral approach to climate action in the news. I think they're always trying to kind of either disempower or empower you in a way that actually will make no difference. So like, come protest and do nothing, go recycle, but it doesn't achieve anything. So it's all a bit of a distraction. But I just wanted to go back to something that you said earlier. You know, how you said that what I said was a new perspective on climate, just like flipping the script to say it's an opportunity. When something bad happens in your life, there's two types of people in this world. This is what the climate discussion can be reduced to. When something bad happens, you know, you get sad.
Yep.
And you either let it consume you and you spiral into depression and stuff. Or you could do that and then, but then you rise and you take that and it becomes a badge of honor that you survived it and it was your experience and you know you did the hard thing and you achieved something as a result and you feel satisfied.
Mm.
That is it. Climate is only a macro expression of our own individual human experience and what we need to call for in our individual lives to be good, to feel good.
Yeah.
This is for, on a global level, what we need to do to feel good.
So
I studied, I worked, and realized that you don't need to understand the climate movement at all. Everyone who's living, breathing on this planet right now knows exactly what needs to be done. And all the great things will happen if we all kind of get on the same page about that.
Yeah, and I think you touched on a very key point. Fear and sex sell, right? Oh. And usually, like, I think, shifting a little bit from climate just to like public health for a second. Mm-hmm. COVID was, I think, if not the biggest slap in the face or wake up call to everyone in the world. Now, I believe I was saying this during, I'm like, watch you guys. Now we're in COVID, myself included. Like I'm worried. I'm going to be so safe, whatever. Watch in 2 years, you will go back to living your life 90% the same way. I think, and like you said, there's an opportunity to do something, right? But us as humans, naturally, I think, like on a global scale, we're not, it's rare for us to be proactive. If things are going well, everything's good, whatever, why should I do that? That's the thought, you know, that comes in your head. But then when something happens, you're like, oh shit, oh my God, I have to do something now. So I don't know how we can be, as a human race or whatever, become more proactive, because our nature is to just revert to one, like crisis averted, revert to default. Usually, mm-hmm. there might be some. I'm not saying there's no change, but there's not, and you probably haven't changed enough to really like make an impact or in your own personal life. I'm saying.
I mean, what we're talking about is one small segment of humanity.
Yeah.
There is survival,
mm-hmm.
100%.
Yeah.
And then there's homeostasis. So yeah. It's like animal kingdom. Okay, oh, survival, I'm running in the savannah and like chasing. And then the lion stops chasing me, so I chill and I drink my water and everything's good and well, and I'm just going to go find another buffalo and et cetera.
Exactly.
But like, we're a little different to that. We have that. But then we also have this, you know, when homeostasis is achieved, we start to create. We start to innovate. We build new things, we imagine, all that. So this is the part that I feel, you know, we're not paying attention to as much, and we're all in our animal body at the moment, like this animalistic, like fear, okay, safety, this, we just, and COVID pulled the rug out from underneath us. And I feel
big time, yeah.
I think we're very lucky that this lesson happened in a, it could have been so much worse, right? And then we got to learn and prepare ourselves as a community for if something worse does happen. But I was really excited when COVID happened, in the sense that I was like, finally, the world will see, because climate was too much of a diffuse issue, that it was going to happen in like 20 years. This was like now,
exactly.
Your life now.
Yeah.
I was like, now people will see how connected we really are, and maybe we can all come together. And you know what? I'd give us a B- as a community. Forget the news and all that corruption and whatnot.
Okay.
I'll give us a B- as a community that, you know, the world's still standing and moving. Humanity is really good. Like, we could, so many worse scenarios could have come out of that. But we're civil. A lot of people did stay home. Like, and I don't think we did it because government told us to. I think we did it because somewhere deep down, that narrative around this is for each other, which was a good narrative to send out. Like, those who responded to it, that was a nice feeling. I do care about my grandma and your grandma, and I'm going to stay home, and that's a symbol. Or even if you don't believe in masks, I'm going to wear it because it's out of respect for you.
Mm-hmm.
And all these things start a little emerging. They're not very valued now, but I thought that they were very beautiful expressions of our humanity.
Mm.
And in other cases, there were some negative things. But I think on the general population level, we did very well.
Interesting. COVID. Give us a B minus. I don't think I'd give us a grade that high. I would have thought, you know, I'd give us a C. I think we passed it decently well. All the things you're talking about, in terms of what it did from a community aspect, how we started to think, like take that extra step, maybe like, okay, let me wash my hands. Your grandparents, whatever, you don't want to do it. So there's a lot of, like, all the things you said are beautiful and it's great, and that's what did happen. But it came, but again, if we're going back to like, where is that coming from? It's fear. At the end of the day.
Yeah. Which,
so I guess listening to this example, now I'm thinking about it, I guess fear can play a positive role, but is there another way?
Fear is necessary. It does trigger us and we need to. But what happens when you see fear? Do you become afraid? Or do you kind of like look and say, okay, what is the antidote to fear?
Mm.
You know it.
Action.
Love.
Oh, love.
The antidote to fear is love. Actions that are underpinned by love. So when communities were cut off and grandparents were sitting alone, there are people going door to door, making sure they had food. This is the love that comes out of the fear, you know?
Yeah.
And that's more of what we need. So climate, oh, the world's ending, everything's flooding. Okay, opportunities to show love, to bring love when it's really hard, when you're actually afraid, but you want to just do the right thing. That's the recipe for a good life.
Yeah.
It's not a long life. It doesn't have to be a long life. We just all should be aiming for a good life.
Yeah. Just enjoy the time while you're here. Make it the best you can, right?
We try.
Reflecting on our conversation right now, it's interesting. Like, now I have a better understanding of how you see the world, and I'm like, it's a lot brighter than maybe my view, which is, I love seeing that because it makes me start to think, like, a trigger makes me like, oh, maybe I should think about something in a different way. But coming back to climate, we're referring back to climate change. I think one thing that's important in a lot of issues that we face around the world is a lack of education in those things. So, for example, in mental health, no one in the world, none of us here, no one grew up like with a class, like you're in school, you know, I like have math. Oh, no, now I have like mental health class to teach you how to be aware, to learn what your emotions are, how to control them, how to manage them, how to know there's something called mental health. That's just one example. And I think that also plays into climate change in a way, because like growing up, I didn't really, like looking back, there wasn't a class that really showed me the importance of it and why we have to like care about it. So my question to you is, I guess, what's the role of the classroom or education when it comes to climate change? What would you say?
From a mental health perspective?
Generally?
I'd like to answer from a mental health perspective.
Yeah, go ahead.
Climate change, the way it's presented, and even, I'm not trying to say like, be positive, like it's scary dying in a tsunami, like while there's a forest fire, while there's this, while there's that, is a scary thing. I'm not going to lie. Like, and I do have fear around that. But imagine how much further we'd get in discussions if we weren't anxious or if we knew how to deal with our anxiety.
Yeah.
Imagine how much further in negotiations we'd get if we didn't take things personally. And these are things you learn in mental health. These are things you learn in healthy relationships. So yeah, I do feel like there's room for that in the classroom. I think it would take us a very long way in dealing with some of the world's most pressing issues.
Yeah.
What else in school? I think cultivating a relationship with nature. Also cultivating an understanding of philosophy.
Okay.
Because in the end, I think also what's been eroded over time that initially or in the past has propelled civilizations into great places is philosophy. And right now, we don't really have that. We have economy.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's our value system. Make more money. This is good.
Mm-hmm.
But if we could just shift, like money is good. It helps us achieve things. And trade is age old. That will not stop. But like trying to figure out how to also divide that discussion into what is well-being? You know, what is it I care about? How can I live? And I really believe that there's no one out there who believe, like there are very few and they're meant to teach us something like sociopaths and serial killers.
Sure.
They're really a small part of the population. The rest of us generally are good. If your bag has not been stolen at the airport, like life is good. People are good.
Yeah, that's a good day.
There's a lot of trust. I mean, not everywhere, not all the time, but overall this place would be absolute anarchy. if we didn't all have values ingrained in us, either in our DNA or instilled in us through parenting, through society, we're not in such a bad place to do that. But I think more emphasis in that in education would really help us be on the right footing to be able to have discussions with people who are different to us, come up with innovative solutions, and really feel empowered to do the hard things.
Yeah, exactly. I think what you said, that like the different way, different areas that education plays into all these areas, like mental health, like climate change, and bringing, like if you grew up learning about that, you probably like throughout your life would have been having some type of discussion about it. You know, like, oh, what did you think of that class? Like, oh, this is what I think. Oh, this is what. But it's again making you like kind of helping you focus on a problem or making you aware of a situation or a problem. So when it comes to climate change, for example, there's, at least from my perspective, it seems coming back to the extremes. And that's what I guess, and the extremes is what's most presented usually from what I've seen myself personally. So it's either like I'm for it or against it. And the guys who are for climate change, and they're the ones that are like super worried, and guys like the water levels are rising, it's getting hotter, you know, you can. And the interesting thing is, like, personally, I believe there is climate change. I do. Because not from any, like, besides like a scientific thing, just look around the world, even places I've been, I'm like, yo, this is like, we're this summer in like Europe, I'm like, this is wrong. Like, it shouldn't be as hot as fucking Dubai. Like, this is not an accident. So I don't know. It sometimes confuses me how, if you're living in this world, you feel the weather, you experience it in different places, no matter where you are. Like now we just had that ridiculous flood in Pakistan, for example, which is like crazy. Like the videos I saw, I'm like, there's so many, like, it's, I think, and I love the word you used before, there's so many, like, indicators. It's kind of like nature screaming, like, hello, guys, yeah, do you see, like, the shit that's happening? Like, wake up, like, get on and do something. So when there's so much like evidence on this, I still don't get how it's like the other side, for example, the ones who are against can see it that way. Like if you see it that way from like, if you're just looking at it from a financial perspective, okay, fine, I get it. Because it's going to cost you a lot to make that change, become more sustainable, whatever, no worries. But if you don't believe in it, like period, like how?
Look, I
don't know.
I won't address the do you believe or not believe point. I'll say this. Environment is cyclical. Okay. We are seeing an acceleration of things that's unprecedented. Maybe this is natural. We don't have historical records going back to the beginning of time.
True.
The only difference between the beginning of time and now is that we're here. Yeah. And for example, the train tracks, they built their infrastructure around maximum temperatures of like 45 degrees or whatever. Mm. So yeah, maybe we could survive physically as a human being in a hotter climate, but our entire infrastructure is going to be compromised because we did not plan for this accelerated rate of climate change.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem, like climate will change, we will adapt, but do we need to sign up for this level of loss of life, this waste of resources, this waste of energy, to see our legacy kind of erode before our eyes just because we didn't want to be forward thinking? Mm-hmm. I don't think we're going to be able to dial back climate change. Like if the 2 degrees scenario is legitimate, no one has an accurate climate model, FYI. So either they're grossly underestimated or overestimated, we don't know. Mm. But I forgot where I was going to go.
Are we kind of getting to like that point of no return that people talk about?
Yeah, that's probably going to happen. I mean, we are seeing irreversible damage to our environment and to our cities and coastal villages and stuff. So what are we going to do about that? This is more the action that I think is needed. Not like, let's reduce emissions. Yeah, that's like on the way. That's what we have to do. But overall, we need to prepare ourselves to be more resilient, to really build things that last, build things that insulate us, that protect us, that to provide security.
Yeah.
When right now it's just like, well, let's just build this thing because I want to make this much money and leave in 3 years. And yeah, you know, like, what real value is that giving to society besides lining the pockets of not even just a few hundred thousand people?
Yeah. On that point, and you said it earlier, making that idea of like making the world a better place, through like care about the environment and so on. I think as people, like I'm even reflecting on myself, like I think we in general, I'm saying everyone, we're so, and myself included, like you're so consumed in like what you have like right in front of you, you know, like your job, your family, your house, your kids, whatever. Like, and obviously there are people who have all that and are like going out and like doing like in trying to push this agenda and so on, but I think it's very that term, that phrasing, making the world a better place. Like if you ask someone who's so like stressed at work, whatever, he's like, you want to make the world a better place? But like, well, I don't give a fuck about the world, I just want to make sure like my life or what is important to me or what I care about, what's around me, is okay. Going beyond that, I think it's hard to do that.
I'm so excited about this question.
Tell me.
Oh, how to put this into words. What is it like? Make a little bit better place is way too care bear. Yeah, I say it because essentially that's my overarching thing. But what I really believe the opportunity is to make your life better. What makes life good? And I don't think anybody can really deny that when you do something for another person, it feels good.
Yeah,
oh, I find sure. Sometimes if you feel like you have the time and you pick up a piece of trash and throw it in the bin, you kind of like pat yourself on the back. Like, I did something.
Mm.
You didn't need to. No one needs to
yeah.
be anything. Everyone can be whatever they want. And then when you do something for yourself, it's good too. And we should all do things for ourselves. So I have three pillars, personal pillars,
okay.
that I think we all should live by. And this is not news. I've heard it repeated millions of times, but I like to think I came to it myself. What is it to live a fulfilled life?
Mm-hmm.
It's actually based on service.
Yeah.
Acting in service of yourself. If that's how you want to spend your whole life, do it. I haven't seen anybody ever only act in service of themselves, but, you know, acting in service of others and acting in service of Earth. Earth, self, others. Once all those three things are satisfied and you're doing them in whatever proportion is good enough for you, I think the world will be a better place. And it doesn't have to be about climate. It just needs to be that ethos, that propels us, that wakes up, makes us wake up in the morning. We go, okay, what am I doing for myself, for others, for the planet?
Yeah.
Big, small, doesn't matter. This little framework is the, for what in my life, what I think is the crux of life. And we'd all benefit from just looking at it that way, because it really does feel the best.
Yeah.
When you do self-care day, amazing. Feel great. Sure. When a friend comes to me for advice or they ask me for a favor that I can do, absolutely I will do it.
Yeah.
And then when I do something for the planet, or even, and that could be just appreciating a tree. I swear to God, you don't have to really do much. That's service. That's homage. That's a beautiful thing. And I think those are the things that are it. And I used to, one thing I want to caveat is I haven't always had a sunny disposition and a positive outlook.
Okay.
I used to watch my favorite genre, TV genre till today is dystopian future Armageddon.
Okay.
I watched that and I've consumed so much of that knowledge in books. I cry. All I did was for like 5 years was read climate change books that tell me it's the end of the world, and I'd sit in my mom's lap and cry. And then I had to like say, okay, no. Am I going to, is that how I want to be? Like, oh, woe is me? Or do I want to live a life where I can be empowered and try and do something, even if it's small? And that, Khalid, is where every little counts. If everybody did that, it doesn't matter on what, the world would change in a minute. In 1 minute. Ooh, I got, gave myself goosebumps. Yes, it would.
I love how you explain that. Like, first of all, on the concept of being in service now, personally, when I was younger, I was just, all I wanted to do was, I want to make money, bro. I wanted this. I want this car. I want this, like all that. And I've said this on the podcast before, like my experience in Amsterdam completely changed me and I look at life in a completely different way. But one thing when I was doing sales in each business I worked in, I never felt fulfilled. I'm like, okay, things are going well, but I'm like, whatever, you know, it doesn't move me. It doesn't feel changing me, whatever. And then when I started getting into learning about mental health, and when I became a hypnotherapist and like worked with people, and what's his name? And lots of like famous people have said, you know, the one thing that is like an unlimited resource that can like, you automatically want to feel good, help someone. It's instant and it's automatic. And not even if you're doing it for like, even if the reason is selfish, the action is not. So the outcome is still like win-win, you know?
Do you think like anyone would disagree with that?
I don't think, there might be, but I would struggle to think so.
My part of my quest in life is to find these like undeniable truths. And this I really believe is one of them. Anyway, sorry, continue.
No worries. And I like what you said about being of service to people, service to yourself, and service to Earth. I think the service to people and life in your life is a very, a lot of people would be quite receptive to that. The last one is, I think, where there's either it's not there, like it's not a part, it's just not something for you, or you don't know how to start making it something for you.
Earth, right?
Yeah, Earth.
Well, exactly. Yeah, because we live in cities and it's really hard to see that. But go tell a farmer, you know, service to Earth, they're going to know exactly what you're talking about. And in fact, that might be the biggest part of their life.
Yeah, that's true.
So we've just been insulated from that.
Yeah.
And in the 21st century, our service to Earth might be a very economical thing that happens in a city. It might be recycling. It might be whatever. Or not taking more than you need, or not wasting food. Like, you don't have to go and literally plant a tree. You can honor your plate, meal plan, things like that. Oh, and guess what? That also serves you. So all that, there are many different ways to be in service to Earth. And it's our job to be creative. I can't think of every possible scenario, but I don't think that it is hard for everyone to find something that makes them feel like they're contributing to their home. This our collective home.
Yeah. I think throughout this whole conversation, one thing that really has stood out to me from what you're saying, and which I really love and I appreciate, is all of these, like all those catchphrases, like make the world a better place, every little bit counts, you know, like climate's gonna change, whatever. I like how in all those different discussions that we've had, you brought it always back to self, like to you, to your life. And like you said, just appreciating a tree, like it's not, like, and that example is great because, like, you're literally doing nothing. Like, it's an internal dialogue you have with yourself. Like, I appreciate this tree or, like, whatever. And I think that mindset is very healthy and it's very positive, and it doesn't make me feel like I'm being like you're trying to change my mind or like you're pushing me to do something. It's simple. It's actionable. It won't take much and doesn't have to be. And the size of the contribution is irrelevant as long as for you personally, you feel like you're doing your part for whatever level you want for mm-hmm. yourself. Which I think is very refreshing. It's a very refreshing perspective. And I think that's a good way to, at least from my perspective, I think that's a good way to, you know, nudge the needle a little bit towards that.
I hope so. I mean, in the end, the thing that gives me hope in this world is that I don't know anything that's significant that nobody else knows. I know that. I feel like that is a fact. There's nothing significant in my brain. Mm. That not every other person understands to a larger or lesser degree, however much they want to bring it into their consciousness. And all these cliches, I love that you said that, because, you know, the whole hippie movement is like, oh, fucking peace is love and blah. And everyone's kind of rolling their eyes at it. But I'd like to invite the audience to take attention, because these are truths that have been echoed that so much that they've become boring to hear. Mm-mm. They're just something that was very common to all of us, all of our human experience.
Yeah.
Every little bit does add up. We have a lot of evidence across history that is demonstrated when, you know, every person that protests made a crowd or whatever instigated a change and whatnot.
True.
So, I mean, I think if anyone wants to do a little bit of reflection, go look up the top cliches in the world and feel inspired, because that is truth. That is what we have collectively come up with to kind of guide our understanding of why and how we're here. Like, why we're here and how we should move through the world.
Like you're saying, the cliche is there for a reason.
They are.
Yeah, they didn't come out
They've just been done to death because we haven't acted on them.
Fair.
We need to get to cliche level 2.
Exactly.
But until we really absorb this, we won't.
No, it's exactly that. I totally agree with you. Laura, I just have 3 more questions for you. First of all, I want to ask, throughout the conversation, like, it's been apparent how, like, your perception of climate change has shifted over the years. Mm. The more you understood about it, but then when you started working in it, it was a different story. So, asking you as Laura today, what are your thoughts? How does it look going forward?
I'm not affiliated with any institution. The views expressed are explicitly my own.
Yes, this is Laura's perspective, guys.
Laura. In the end, I don't think that, I mean, I used to hop and skip to work. I'm saving the world today. Mm-mm. You know, I felt like so accomplished, so like great that I'm aligned with my values. But in the end, like, it's great to work around passionate people. That's what I found in my work, like people who share my interests. That's great. But doing good in work is so much more than what work you're doing. It's, there are people out there who are making a bigger impact on the world than I could ever make, doing like a sales job than I could ever make in climate or have made. And in the end, if the bureaucratic system is stifling and if the intentions behind growth are capitalistic and leave people behind, then it's never really going to feel very fulfilling. Let me just backtrack and try and think of what you said. The system is broken and it's not serving us. So anything in that system is not going to provide that sense of well-being and goodness. We try with our work to feel like, oh yeah, super aligned. But the people who are feeling the most aligned with their purpose and goals and values are the ones who are probably doing small-scale farming, small-scale like education, everything like very ground level, very close to the earth, close to the...
Yeah, like grassroots kind of
grassroots. Thank you. Sorry, I should know that. That should be at the tip of my tongue. But yeah, I think that's really where you're seeing the change. And I would love where you could work in a big corporation and have a really strong and beautiful culture. And there are some companies that really demonstrate a strong culture and have had very positive impacts because of that culture. But overall, I don't think that the general economy and those that are emerging in it and thriving in it are necessarily choosing to uphold a very strong culture and values, even though they have immense amount of influence. And I would love to see them do that.
Yeah.
We would change. Mm. We would be inspired by them. And there are brands that inspire.
For sure.
And I would love, I mean, that's the future. I want to see that happen.
Yeah. So brands that have more of a, but I think nowadays, like, I think I can even realize over the last, like, 5 to 10 years, I think as consumers, let's say, our mindset has shifted. Like, a lot of quite successful brands nowadays have a social cause. Like, not only do I like, okay, you have a great product. If your product's shit, I'm not buying your thing. Mm. But you have a great product and you, like, do something. Like, every T-shirt, you know, we give a book to, you know, mm-hmm. a child or something. Like, something simple, but I think people are more attached to that nowadays because then they feel kind of like they get that little like 1% feeling of fulfillment. Service. Like, I know, like, okay, yeah, I'm getting this because I like it and it looks great and I can't wait to wear it. But I liked it. But this social cause that these guys have also makes me feel good.
No, we're absolutely being robbed blind by not being offered this for every single thing we participate in. Like, profits should not be so astronomical that they can't afford us that feeling as consumers that we're not only just destroying the planet with every choice that we make, that we're also doing our little bit.
Yeah.
And advocating for something, or being able to advocate not just for my own benefit by having this product, but also that, you know, this is going to benefit someone else.
Yeah.
I would love to see that being like a standard in all organizations.
Yeah.
I mean, we do have the issue of like greenwashing, which
greenwashing? Sorry, I don't know.
So greenwashing is like where, you know, a company will say, oh yeah, we use only like recycled paper, or we're going to go to there's make lots of campaigns around what they're doing for sustainable development or climate change. And really it's such a drop in the bucket and not impactful and not connected to their actual work.
Mm.
So it's very external. Anything that's being done to innovate and align with climate or sustainable development needs to be done internal in the organization, not giving charity necessarily. I'm small scale T-shirt for T-shirt. That's great. But I think I'm talking macro scale. This term greenwashing kind of emerged with like Shell and the big oil companies like saying, oh, and we're doing this. But it's really just they're trying to put that in the forefront of the messaging when there's a lot worse stuff going on. And it doesn't, the rest of their actions don't align with that activity, that whatever they're doing.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, it sounds like in that example it uses. So greenwashing, from at least now my understanding, is I'm trying to grab the attention of the communities or people who actually care about those things.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm doing it. So, and I think the example you used were great. Like, I'm an oil company, but I'm doing this. It doesn't really fit. But I'm just, you know, it's attention grabbing. But one thing throughout our conversation, and you've said this many times, and this opens a huge topic. But I'm gonna try not to like dive so deep into it because we'll be here for like hours. On the concept of it's all a distraction. You said that word multiple times in so many of the different discussions that we've made. And I've never thought of it of that way, or not necessarily thought of it that way. I've never been aware that I'm being distracted from what's actually going on. And this is happening not just in the conversations that we've had today, but in news, in health, in everywhere. You know, you're trying to paint a picture that's not really the story or not really the solution. So the question becomes, if I'm constantly being distracted in so many different ways, whatever, how do I, and I think it's impossible to not be, you will, even if you try, I think you'll always have some blind spots until someone, you have a conversation like this that maybe opens your eyes to certain things. But if you're constantly being distracted, how do I take a step back and look at it more objectively? I'm like, okay, what's actually going on here?
That's such a great question. I will backtrack on the word distraction.
Okay.
A little bit. We are distracted. I don't think and I don't know if any of this is really intentional. It's just happening.
Mm.
That's why I call it runaway kind of capitalism and all the things that come with that, which is creating fear and driving business and whatnot. Pharmaceutical companies are very powerful and capitalized a lot out of COVID. I'm sure they did provide solutions, but then also they probably did some actions to maximize profits that were not necessary. So this is just the way the world works. It's not a news. But I would say that it's less about distraction, more about disempowerment. What's happened is we've kind of congregated in these cities. It's like, we don't know, we need to be told what to do. We need rules and regulations like, no, you do this, this is legal, this, that. And we've kind of given up our agency and accountability to governments who are also just comprised of people. And yeah, over time, that just kind of makes us feel like, oh, we don't know. They know. Mm. Let them tell me. But actually, you know how and what you need in, as a life.
Yeah.
And you have every right to demand that and to strive for that and request it or whatever, advocate for it. So I think the way that this is all kind of going is it's just disempowering us to make us feel like, oh, you can't do anything, just listen. So like the best thing to do out of COVID would have been, oh, there's a health crisis, I need to be healthy. But instead it's like, government, what should I do? What should I take? What do I? And and it's great that we have that messaging and support. And I think it provides a lot of security and stability mentally. Like I know that living in the UAE during that time was amazing because everything was very clear, black and white. This is what you're gonna do, and nobody disobeyed. And I actually loved it. I loved to see how people were respecting the rules. And it made me think like, okay, so in another situation, maybe we can also be as respectful and as successful. So I think kind of giving up our agency a little bit and feeling like we can only do what we're told, rather than like kind of knowing intuitively and taking the effort to define for ourselves what our needs are and what we need to do. I think that's what's missing. So everyone's watching the news, cool, but are you critically thinking about how that applies to your life, whether you agree or not? Not to go and fight on Twitter, to decide, how does this information help you, hinder you, or present an opportunity in your life to do something different? And I think that just that little note is not being said and people aren't noticing, and we're just kind of zombie mode. I'm not saying I'm free of this. I'm the same. It's easier not to think. Let someone else think for me. Why?
That's true,
But if we all start thinking for ourselves, considering that we all, as we mentioned before, have some core truths, bring out those core truths, that'll help guide us in hand with government, enhance our ability to create demand so that government and corporations can respond. And then, guess what? We made the world a better place.
I like what you said about the concept of agency and like letting that go and being the kind of giving, like taking no accountability for ourselves. Like, oh, if something happens, that's what the government said. So I have to, it's not my fault. It's just that. But again, you do have, if you really care, again, you have to care to go learn, to go take that knowledge, to think about the stuff critically. Like the news example you said, something my dad always tells me. So, personally, I really hate watching the news. I really, really hate it. And that's why when you said earlier, like, oh, news, puppies, I'm like, I wish it was ever that.
Once upon a time.
But it's always so, like, negative. It's always, literally, I can't remember, like, watching the news one day and being like, oh, that didn't make me feel like shit mentally, or make me empathize or feel bad for people in different places who are less fortunate or have struggled or whatever the case might be. And my dad always tells me, he always says, like, you have to read. He's like, everything that happens in the world, and kind of touching on your point, because we're all connected, everything that happens in the world is going to affect you here today. Like, he'd use the example of like the whole oil thing now. Like, look, like the prices here, for example, that we're paying, it's gone up like 50%. He's like, yeah, see, because of what's happening there in Ukraine, for example, it's affecting your life, like, here today. This is, I know, just a side note, but just based on, like, what you were saying, it kind of triggered, like,
that. Take it back to climate. Yeah, what's happening over there is going to affect you. A flood in Pakistan or in the Philippines will create mass migration, and people will need to move into cities, try and find work, creates more competition, more pressure on resources, more pressure on infrastructure, and it will affect you. Yeah. Everything, we are now way too interconnected for us to believe that anything is away. Anything is over there, like nothing. You don't throw anything away. It's all sitting in the Pacific garbage patch or underground or what. Like, there's no away. We're all here in one place. And we're so interconnected now that you're going to feel the ripples of every action.
Yeah.
And it's a really good point. I don't know if I've ever, I mean, news used to just be kind of matter of fact. Now it's very emotional. I think that's the difference. And in terms of good news, for so many years, I wanted to start like some good news network. And I'll tell you what, they exist. There's papers that just, Upworthy is probably the most popular one.
Okay.
That they try and promote good news so that you have this psychological relationship with what's going on in the world. That's not necessarily doom and gloom. And that kind of puts you in such fear that you want to give up your agency, because how can you possibly tackle climate change? Like, tell me what to do, big government.
Yeah, yeah, know? Yeah.
And then these little stories kind of give you little impressions that, you know, people are capable of, you know, feeling good, making change. You don't have to worry about the big, big problems. You can just work on your own and things will ripple and become better.
Yeah.
Or at least more tolerable. but yeah, so no, I don't see that. I don't know if there's ever been a time where the news wasn't operating with some form of agenda, but that's okay. We just have to have an agenda of our own as well to complement that.
That's a good point.
News can be news. Mm-mm. It can be and take whatever shape it takes over the many generations. But what are we doing? How are we receiving that news? That's the question.
Yeah.
And we're not currently tailoring that or actively engaged in how we're absorbing it.
Yeah. I love how you brought the example back to climate change. And again, like the example that you just used, like with the flood in Pakistan, for example, and how like people are going to now move and that's going to create this and this and this. And my train of thought would never like go to that extent. But listening to you say it, I'm like, God, she's right. Like that is what this, you don't have a choice. That is what's going to, like on the big scale, that is what's going to happen. And on the point that like we're all like to believe nowadays that anything that happens in the world is not going to affect you in some way. Is I think naive to think, but also, and I'm speaking myself here. Honestly, guys, this is not like if it's as long as it's like even if I'm not thinking of how it's affecting me personally, and I think maybe there's a lot of people that feel this way. If it's not like here, like in like here, like for example, outside my house, like okay, I'm like it's fine, you know, like like we're good, you know what I mean. But I think something like that is, I think it's a personal thing. I think everyone has their own levels of awareness when it comes to stuff like that. Lara, I could probably sit and talk to you
for
1,000 hours on so many different topics. But I want to round off the podcast that we've talked about with climate change. And I wanted to ask you, I have two questions left. These are questions I ask all my guests.
Okay.
So
first, I wish you'd sent those to me before.
No, I know those. Some guests ask for questions. Those two I never send because I want them to be instinctive. Mm. So if I ask you, Lara, looking back, either personally, professionally, or whatever, if I ask you the question, what are you most proud of for yourself? What would you say?
Honestly, just believing in myself. I don't always believe in myself, but the times that I have has led to some really wonderful things. And I hope that everybody gets a chance to believe in themselves either every day or at least sometimes.
Yeah. Hopefully more times than not. And I think I relate to that like 100%. I think everyone listening can relate to that in some way or another. Mm. And I think that's a beautiful thing that, yeah, it's not always, maybe you have there are going to be the down days. This is life. It's not all good. You can't always be 100%. Believe. There's going to be doubts. I've experienced this with like the work I do, with the podcast, whatever. But here I am and we're still doing it because I love it. And for my last question, Lara, what is the message that you'd like everyone to take home with them today?
Everybody knows exactly what needs to be done to quell this fear that is resonating and being promoted in front of all of us. Act in service of self, earth, and others.
I think that's a perfect way to round off the podcast. And I love what you said about everyone knows what needs to be done. The question is, and I include myself in this, do we do it? That's what it comes down to. Lara, I wanted to say thank you so
thank
much
you.
For coming on the show. This has been such a fun conversation. Honestly, I literally don't know anything about climate change. So sitting down, having this kind of discussion, and like now I have so many different things to think about when it comes to this topic. So really thank you for your
time.
It's
definitely the airy-fairy version, but it's still useful,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, it's okay, whatever. There's I think for every airy-fairy version, you find like the complete opposite. So it's okay. If anyone wants to reach out to you, talk to you, connect with you, how can they do that?
Well, I'm happy to receive any feedback on this conversation or thoughts on @Dahansky on Instagram. You can also find me on LinkedIn, Lara Dahan.
Guys, Lara, thank you so much for coming on the show. Guys, thank you so much for listening. Please make sure to like, follow, and share and subscribe to the podcast on Instagram @hope.it.helps with 2 S's. And as always, guys,
I hope it helps.
Peace.
Perfect.